Hello, everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, the Laser Time Network Simpsons podcast, where we go through every episode in some sort of order, I believe, right?
Indeed. Right now, Patreon donators are getting the first season for free.
Yeah.
Or,
you lucky ducks.
Or free and little asterisk
there. It's our pilot program.
It's our pilot program, baby. You want this? You want this? You want more of this? Help us out.
Tell a friend.
Tell a friend.
In today's episode, we'll be talking about is the season one classic, There's No Disgrace Like Home, in which a bizarro universe opens up and we see a different Simpsons family than the one we know and love.
It is so... This one is one of the most different episodes ever. Like,
I think it contains one of the most iconic scenes from early Simpsons
2. Oh, yes. Totally.
For sure. That's why I chose it. So before we get started, Chris is going to tell us what was happening when this episode aired. When was that, Chris?
This Week in Simpsons.
Oh, my God.
That would be January 28th, 1990. Milli Vanilli tops the wins its first and last American Music Award with the single Girl You Know It's True. Born on the 4th of July, and Tango and Cash took a backseat to Driving Miss Daisy at the U.S. box office. And this episode aired opposite the Super Bowl 24, where MVP Joe Montana threw 5 touchdowns to defeat the Denver Broncos, winning San Francisco 49ers their second consecutive championship.
There you go, Joe.
Whoa.
I think Paula Abdul had a good year, too,
Indeed.
If I remember correctly.
Well, wait a minute. Like, this aired against the Super Bowl. Or the week of the Super Bowl? Like,
the night of the Super Bowl.
Really?
The Super Bowl was on this was on a Sunday. That's right. They moved it to Thursdays later. So, wow, they played... What was Fox thinking? Airing a new episode against a Super Bowl?
I guess. Yeah. I don't know. What do you do? There are not that many channels. It's not like everything can go dark.
Just
for the Super
Bowl.
But usually things go into reruns.
Wow.
Also, a bit of air date trivia. This is the first episode broadcast in Britain.
Yeah, I saw
that hit the BBC
too.
In November of 1996.
Yeah,
wow.
When I saw that information, it made a lot of sense. At my old job, a coworker, we did an article called "The Best Simpsons Game Ever," which was really, and I said that list would be 3 games, but
two.
But it was a ranking of every single Simpsons game ever. Mm-hmm. And it was written very well by a British compatriot of mine. But he had all these season one references, and I was just like, why are you making all these when you can make any reference to any episode, you're mentioning Jacques and the bowling? Like, what? Who cares? And now that I realize that they just got a glut of Simpsons episodes in 96 that they could like just take from any season. That kind of changes my idea of like why an old episode, a season one episode, feels fresher to them than it does to me.
So they just got like a shotgun blast at once.
And it was set to whore.
Excuse me.
That's the makeup gun joke.
Can we say that? Oh yeah.
Patreon people, please. Yeah. Don't hurt us.
What is this episode about?
This episode is about Homer trying to get his family back on track and stop being so darn dysfunctional.
And when you talk about jerk-ass Homer, this is the polar opposite and equally unsettling.
Yeah,
where everybody else is worse than him.
What do we want to call this Homer? Like imposter Homer?
Yeah.
Or like person Homer?
If you think about his actual progression, this might have been... he was still trying.
Yeah.
And why?
Well, you do see flashes of real Homer in this one, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, he's not totally under control. But it is weird
true.
To see him come into the living room and yell at Marge and the kids for eating on the couch. Like,
yeah,
it's weird.
Yeah. This was written by Mal Jean and Mike Rees, who are two of the most, like, prolific and long... Well, Al Jean, especially, long-serving writers on the show. Long-serving writers on the show. And... This, though, feels like such a stock sitcom script that they just, like, it's the kind of thing you'd pitch when you don't know what The Simpsons is.
Mm.
Any sitcom would have, well, the dad is worried that the rest of the family's not good enough, and so he tries to improve them, but they realize they're all a problem.
And I think, like, Al and Mike had just a big bucket of psychiatrist jokes. Yeah. Like, they needed to dump it on some script, and it was the late 80s, so why not The Simpsons? Because no one's making those jokes anymore, are they?
My God. There are... So many firsts in this episode.
What are them?
Please tell us.
What I had listed, it's the first appearance of Eddie and Lou. The cops.
Lou is white.
Yep.
He looks more like Latino.
Skin tones were all over the place in the first season.
Yeah.
Indeed. Not a first, but the Simpsons in this season appeared outside of their normal clothing. casually, and that never happens after the first season.
When you see the opening of the show and Homer is wearing like the red striped shirt.
Yeah, Marge
like,
is wearing a different my summer shirt. What? What season is it ever in Springfield?
Yeah, I don't think we've seen those clothes again, thank God.
Never.
Homer.
Though Bart and Lisa dress the same.
So right from the opening, I believe we have the first, as far as I can tell. I could be wrong on this. We're shooting these out of order. Shooting is the wrong word, but shut up. The first
Marshmallow.
So the first
trying to get at least some of the unfortunate noises out of my system while I can, Marge. I don't want to embarrass myself at the company picnic.
Yeah, so he doesn't want to embarrass himself in front of Burns, who we don't meet for the first time, but for the first time threatens to do this.
Now it's time to say goodbye. Please get off my property until next year. I suggest you don't dawdle. The hounds will be released in 10 minutes.
It's the first time he threatens to release the hounds.
There's also one thing that Burns did that they didn't follow up on too much. Reading things from index cards. I think that was like a Reagan joke.
That's what the commentary said. Yeah, that they were inspired by Reagan would read names
and he's
off index cards.
A very Reagan impression, but it's also, I believe, the first time Burns doesn't recognize Homer.
Afternoon, Mr. Burns.
Hello there.
Simpson. Homer.
Here you go, sir. Oh, yes. Oh, and this must be your lovely wife, Marge. Oh, and look at little Lisa. Why, she's growing like a weed. And this must be, Brat.
Bart.
Don't correct the man, Brat. Afternoon, Mr. Burns.
That gave me a good laugh. I'd be like, don't correct the man, Brat. Until the release of the hounds moment, I was thinking the whole time, this is the nicest Burns has ever been.
Yeah.
He's not, I mean, he isn't actually really nice, but...
He has a man fired.
He has a man fired, but for not like his son being a jerk. But when has Burns ever cared about family values?
Exactly. He's all about family values in this
When would he ever let people into his home? Why? When would he... When would he like bother to have any company get together?
There was a room in his house just full of like toddlers, like a daycare, like set up.
Watching
like,
what show?
Mr. Burns. Happy Little
Happy
Elves.
Little Elves.
Of course, Happy Little
once
Elves.
Again.
Yeah. That was another distracting. Like there were several character designs in this that just made me like hurt. Like and right before that scene where Marge says, "What a cute baby!" It's the ugliest baby they've ever drawn on the show.
If you want a real freak show, look at the background characters that aren't animated.
Yeah.
Just like in the backgrounds, it is just like melted people.
It also
left and right.
A dumb thing I noticed just when they're at the party. There is one woman there who is one of the Simpsons' prominent female voice actors doing a weird Southern accent. Yeah. And like, there's only one character on The Simpsons with a Southern accent, or you know, they're Cletus and Brandine.
Brandine, yeah.
As if the South was part of their universe. But help me connect to it.
Though I did like that was also such a stock sitcom scene of the one mother saying, "Well, my son does this and this, and they're perfect, and my daughter's great at this too." That was a Southerner.
Yeah.
But I actually kind of like the way Marge said that. Felt like such a James Brooks line to me of her saying, "Well, they have greatness. It's just not easy to see, and it's like this." Also, I feel like this is the first time as a kid I'd ever seen something identified as drunk and that somebody drank.
And it was Marge.
And was drunk.
Marge got drunk before Homer.
It's the first, like...
Visibly.
Of her dabbling with light alcoholism.
Yeah, but,
series.
Like, it was...
It was Marge... Yeah. Homer is embarrassed that Marge is drunk. Like... Mm-hmm. Though Marge's drunk acting, I really appreciated it now.
Sure.
When she claps too long and Homer's like, "Marge."
Yeah.
And then she says, "I'm sorry, everyone. Sorry, everyone. Like, wow, that was good. Julie Kavner did a really good job there.
I think I have a clip of that scene. Just for Burns.
Musician, cease that infernal tootling.
This is it.
That infernal
see, there's
tootling.
There's a bit of Burns in there.
No, he gets meaner as the scenes go on, and I bet once they were like, "Oh yeah, he does release the hounds, and he's going to kill people if they don't get off his property."
Oh, and
all right, cool. That's Burns.
I captured a clip at the. We'll get into that in a little bit.
So
I suppose.
Do we talk about.
Go ahead.
The song. There's like a little tiny musical
what is
number.
That?
It is a drinking song, Henry. Mm-hmm. I think you were looking it up.
It was popularized. It's called "Hey Brother, Pour the Wine," and Dean Martin wrote no song, but it was popularized by Dean Martin, who was alive when. If we may mention that, he lived until the late 90s.
Wow. So is that our first dead dude?
Well, I mean, it's a reference to him, yes.
Yeah, he wasn't actually...
Well, we have a little jingle for that, just in case.
Well, I mean, if you want to talk about dead dudes, all the... Well, Sam Simon was heavily involved in all these in the first season, so... Up.
Death stalks you at every turn! Ah, there it is! Death!
Death, this is... Canonically, you said was a dead... Simpsons character?
Dr. Marvin Monroe.
Yeah, that's right.
Until they unkilled him in a dumb later
season. The episode where Marge wrote her own book.
Yeah.
He showed up and said, I've been very sick, or something, and that was the joke. But
even though they showed his tombstone, they had the Marvin Monroe
Memorial
Hospital. And it was because that they said it was Harry Shearer hated doing Marvin Monroe's voice.
Really?
It hurt.
Well,
I'm Dr. Marvin Monroe. That hurts my voice to even try it.
I have a clip from his commercial, and the commercial is
oh my God.
Like the meanest thing. I love this commercial.
Honey, aren't you going to work today?
No, I don't think so.
Honey, you have a problem, and it won't get better till you admit it.
I admit this. You better shut your big yap.
Oh, you shut up.
No, you shut up.
No, you shut up.
Oh, shut up.
Shut up.
Shut up.
Kid walks in.
Why don't you both shut up?
Hi, friends. I'm Dr. Marvin.
Hi, friends.
Oh. Does this scene look familiar? If so, I can help. No gimmicks, no pills, no fad diets. Just family bliss or double your money back. So call today.
Dr. Marvin Monroe's Family Therapy Center. 1-800-555-HUG.
Oh, Harry Shearer doing double that, duty.
Like, I love that Shearer voice.
I love the people screaming at each other when I was a kid, but only now that I realize how dark it is.
So
like
dark.
Homer gets into a fist fight with his best friend before, like, it's not even like a play for humor.
He just fucking punches him and then Barney punches him back.
Oh, it's also, like, it's pretty vicious,
When there's a scene, so they go see Dr. Marvin Monroe to work things out as a family. They pawn their TV $250, which is, again, weird to hear them discuss. Like, we can't afford something that will help our family forever for $250. I don't know if that's just
inflation. We only have $80 saved up in our college fund.
Apparently Marge's wedding ring costs less than the TV.
Yes, yeah. So they pawn the TV and they go to Dr. Marvin Monroe. And I forgot. Oh, there's a scene where just Homer picks up a lamp to throw at his family. Like, it's more violent than, like, I think even the choking
scene. I was like, whoa, what the hell are you gonna do, Homer? Like, and that was one of those flashes of the animation sucks throughout most of it, but there are flashes of, like, whoa, this is, you put your creativity into this one.
I have a note about that. The boxing on television. One, there's still a black and white television.
That's what I was going to say. It is a black and white TV.
I became obsessed with that recently because I had to say on mic that my first TV was a black and white one in my room, and then realized how old I sound to younger millennials. But I had to confirm that, like, when was the last black and white TV made? They were still making them up until 2000. So, as far as I could tell.
I had a portable TV that was black and white.
Sony Watchman.
I watched wrestling on it some mornings because my parents were like, well, you're not taking the TV to watch wrestling. You're watching this. Though the black and white TV, apparently they later undid that joke. The joke was that the TV was just covered in grime, that it looked black and white.
Right.
And
but more they're watching boxing. The boxing characters on there are of a classic animated style for some reason.
Yeah,
none of them have a, what's the white part of your eye called?
Iris.
Iris is the white part.
Whatever.
How about the whites of your eyes?
The whites of your eyes, like the early first season of Simpsons, there are a lot of characters with no whites. Mm-hmm. Of their eyes, and
the dots
boxers
in
particular look like Fleischer animation practically.
That's another graining rule.
I did have a couple of things that had not yet been solidified. We played Homer's possibly his first. I could be wrong on that, especially with the production order being so weird. Here's how unsolidified Doe was. They're going around peeping into people's homes, and I remember. This had people going.
I love that scene. It made me laugh as a kid.
Because Peeping Tom was a thing we were afraid of in like 89 before, like, we were giving all our information to Facebook and drones were carrying out massive strikes. Mm-hmm. People looking in her window. And like it was I remember people talking about it at school the next day, and they go to people's houses to see what other families look like. And then that leads to this joke where a Doe would have been nice.
Whoa, look at this place. What a dump.
It's worse than you think. I just trampled this poor sap's flower bed.
Homer, this is our house.
Stop!
Yeah.
That should have been a doe.
That's so close to a doe.
Bah!
No, that's also one of the stupidest, like,
yeah.
That joke doesn't work. They know, that's so extreme, but that is...
Even a dog can recognize his house almost.
It feels like more of a modern Homer.
Yeah.
And another thing, the dumb thing that I noticed... Mm. It's an animated show, and in the previous episode, you talking about James L. Brooks bringing in weird film, his film baggage into cartoons. There's a scene with him at the dinner table, and it is shot as if there's an actual camera there.
Oh, yeah.
So on the side of the table, every single child is eating on the left side
it's
of the
camera
table.
It's camera staging.
Yeah. It's camera staging.
I didn't notice that, actually.
And later on, Maggie has moved to the other side. It's the... Yeah. Yes, that's a dumb thing I wrote down.
The virtual camera of animation can be anywhere, but they weren't thinking of that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think too, boy, the speaking of off-model stuff, the first family they see who is carving the turkey, they look like out of Duckman.
Yeah, it's like, was Everett Peck on board for this scene or something?
I wonder if it is.
It could be.
He could have been Duckman drawing.
It was Klasky Csupo, so who knows?
He could have been in the office.
Yeah.
And speaking of things...
Oh, I just want to point out their TV is a Motorola.
Motorola? Okay, was that a joke or was that
with,
like...
I think it might have been a joke.
Though, is there things... Did they get a new TV? So did in later episodes they have a better TV? I can
tell
a
widescreen one now.
Well, now they do.
They didn't get the cart that they promised the kids. So
yeah, the cart you're gonna run it. Okay, so first let me say that about their TV and some other things. Mm-hmm. Those were the things that made me feel old when they said a 21-inch TV and a cart. We can move it into the dining room. Like the joke of it is that those are small things for people to get excited about.
Mm-hmm.
But even that those are supposed to feel like small luxuries. Like a 21-inch TV is. I don't mean to sound like maybe I'm too much of a fancy pants, but do they even make them that small?
It was more acceptable with when the aspect ratio was 4:3.
Yes, and then also $2 beers, like when Eddie and Lou come in there and say like, "Can we get beers?" That'll be $2. I'm just kidding, boys. Like number one, I love that joke as a kid to be introduced to the idea the rules are different for cops and they can abuse their power. Like a joke about cops abusing their power. And then two, the two beers are $2. Like even
as late as 2006, I knew a bar that did dollar drafts. And the beer was awful.
I guess in any town in America, you can still find
anywhere
cheap
but
beer.
San Francisco, where this recording is
$7
taking place.
Drafts.
Yeah. Did anybody have? I just want to see if anybody connected with this with me. I think, and we've talked about jokes we loved as a kid, usually from Bart. Is there one you can remember from this episode? Because I have a super quick clip of it.
My favorite was when he said, "Show him the empty space where our TV used to be." that sounded like me being a passive-aggressive jerk, being dragged. I could definitely identify as a kid with Bart being dragged to things he didn't want to go to. Like, that's a very kid thing of, I don't want to go to your... work stupid thing. I want to watch cartoons. It's the weekend.
This is a decent example of that because when my grandparents were still alive and or had their facilities, we had to do something. I was obligated to do something with them before we ate dinner. And what was that?
Give them a kiss?
You really give people kisses before you eat?
I don't know what your grandparents
say grace.
What do you think my grandparents...
Oh, say grace, yeah.
Rub-a-dub-dub. Thanks for the grub.
Fucking floored me. Floored me. I pulled it out every Thanksgiving thinking it was my own line.
The more blasphemous one from the Thanksgiving episode. But that's great. I like it.
By the way, this episode has two things that will become a staple of The Simpsons that you really didn't see much in season one, which are direct references to films.
Yes.
One of Us. One of Us. Like, I had no clue what Freaks is.
That's
a
deep
kid.
Cut.
I didn't know for a very long time. And then also, they were already in though Burns' Manor, well, also Homer calls it stately Burns Manor. But second, Burns' home, which looks nothing like it does in later seasons, it's Xanadu. Like,
for sure,
they built Xanadu. He's Charles Foster Kane already.
The reveal is the same, too. The shot, even like with Homer saying
totally.
That.
He's
that
every
line.
Tyrant they ever need him to
it
be
was
all the time.
Xanadu.
Xanadu.
It was the Xanadu reveal.
That guy's got a great voice.
I love that guy's voice.
Any trivia that we have on the production of the episode? You commentary
watchers?
Yeah,
I have a couple. Well, here's was one wild one I didn't know. Well, first off, that Burns was designed by the late Sam Simon.
Yes.
Like, he designed Burns and gave him this skinny look, but they didn't know that when when writing the show, and that apparently Gina Reese, in their script, he was called Mr. Meanie.
Yeah.
Jesus, really?
Yeah. That was, that they had no clue. Also,
take that shit to Hanna-Barbera. Get out of here.
So when Homer meets the family that's the good family, which would just be the Flanders now.
Yeah.
But when he meets them, number one, I love that line where he says, play the clip.
I'll just say this right. We'll say that for the end. Sorry.
Boy, I'm glad that's over. Now we can go home and act normal again.
What do you mean?
Oh, come on. That cornball routine? I love you, Daddy. Give me a break.
I pity you.
Why?
I do love that
one. That's the perfect dumb response.
But that's the kind of writing that separated it from sitcoms, because when a character said, I pity you, pause for canned laughter. And instead, they tagged it with a better joke.
Yeah.
Why?
That Homer is so oblivious to it. But also, yeah, that if you lived in a dysfunctional family, it's like, well, yeah, we had to act normal for this thing, right? We had to be on good behavior, even though we hate each other. Now, that family was called the Gamble family.
What?
Named after Tom Gamble, who was a writer with them on Late Night. But he would, like, a decade or more later, him and his writing partner, Max Pross, would be hired to the show. Like, so if you listen to current, more recent commentary tracks, you'll hear Tom Gamble and Max Pross. And Tom Gamble has this very old man voice of like, it's me, Tom Gamble.
He's not as old as he sounds. He sounds like a mummy.
And also that Lou was apparently named after Detroit Tigers MVP Lou Whitaker.
Really? Yes. Wow.
Al Jean is from Detroit, and he's a big Tigers fan. So there you go. And lastly, on the commentary, they mentioned...
This is the only episode iconic, to appear in a Die Hard movie.
Yeah. The iconic scene of the episode, I feel like was the number one clip you'd see of The Simpsons in the early years. The electrocution scene.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the entire... before we get started, the entire, Monroe office set piece feels like a great comedy sketch.
Yeah.
It's like, let's move from like set piece to set piece.
Oh, exactly.
And it feels like so tightly written, and it was still
great. SNL piece. It was like, we'll go here, let's do this thing, and then this thing, and then this thing.
And it contains a reference to the Tracy Ullman Simpsons, the frosty chocolate milk.
That's
let's
right.
Let's go out for frosty chocolate milkshake.
It was the weird, even more off-model good Simpsons, not even the Gamels.
I love seeing those Negaverse Simpsons. Like, I like that.
Please don't say that again.
Okay, no, but the electrocution scene, it wasn't Die Hard. They pointed out on the commentary, this was the first commentary that that Mike Reese I had heard him on, and Mike Reese is so funny, and he's one of the least nostalgic or positive on them, and he's so negative.
Yeah, he always calls old stories on their bullshit. Like, well, what are they doing here?
Or he'd say, oh, what a great joke that was. Like, he trashes the couch gag the chalkboard gag on the episode is like, I won't belch in class, and then Reese just says, one of our best jokes.
In the order we were viewing these, the piece that's cut out of the Simpsons intro forever is the shot of Lisa on her bike from the front with her face obscured.
Yeah.
You don't even see that in the second season.
Yeah.
And also the scene where Bart steals the bus stop from those hideous looking season
yes,
one extras.
That is completely gone.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the season one opening gets replaced. The season two opening stuck around until the HD era. And so it's so strange to see the 1 year they had the season one opening. But anyway, Reese also points out that one of the reasons they used it in the Die Hard film was that
Fox owns it.
And that he says that you see this in several Fox films, that they want to give the audiences a funny scene to see in the middle of all this stuff. Like, well, people will have it in The Simpsons. We just show them this.
I mean, it's still a good scene. And I love every second that even Maggie gets shocked.
Yeah,
Maggie receives an electric shock, and I love the idea that we don't know from which family member.
Yeah.
But yeah, the family members, it's the dynamic of it is so great that you can zap everybody else, but they can zap you back, and the lesson is supposed to be nobody will want to zap anybody, and that instead they can't stop zapping each other.
This and hitting each other with foam bats, like, even if I hadn't watched this 1,000 times, Bart removing the padding from his foam bat to hit Martin. Yeah. That resonated with me really hard.
Yeah, I still wince when that happens because it looks like it hurts.
Well, now I was thinking of myself as Marvin getting hit in the leg. But as a kid, I was thinking, hey, yeah, I've seen those things before. You take them off. They're really cool.
But this scene also informed all of my knowledge on psychotherapy up until I was forced into go. It really did.
Wow. Well, as an adult watching this, knowing about like psychiatry and emotional problems and things like that, I think it's funny how the Simpsons just go down the list of things that can help them until they are in this like animal conditioning experiment, because that's the only thing that can do, like, that can work, is to like operate on their lizard brains. Like,
and then at the end they just go like, well, I guess we can't be fixed. Let's profit off this at least that we were like broken. And it's also Reese pointed out that this is a trick they did in a million episodes, which is dark horror and just these things about how the family is ruined. And then for the last 20 seconds, they're like, oh, we're so happy. You know what? I accept this is a happy ending. Happy music. Yay!
Not only that, that ending
is
the basis for the ending of the Simpsons Arcade ending. Yeah. Walking down the sideway. That's
right.
It's almost lifted directly from the cell.
Well, because the development of the Simpsons Arcade game started in February of 90, and this aired in January.
I love how people have to keep pointing that. I saw somebody point that out, one of the writers pointed out to Conan O'Brien. Like, people talk about the Simpsons success growing. Like, it was immediate and instantaneous.
Yeah, if anything, it just got lower over time. It started huge and then, you know, just
and it spiked
off
again for me after I, you know, gravitated more towards Homer.
Oh, there were two. I made two other notes of things that struck me as inconsistent with future non-canonical. Mm-hmm. One is that Marge is watching Itchy and Scratchy with Bart and Lisa.
Like just kind of getting.
And that,
out of it.
And that Homer's mom said that he'd be a failure, and just like, I can't remember the exact line, but that she said this awful thing to him, and then he says, you know what, she was right. But that's, Abe would say that. That would be what Abe would say. His mom would never say that.
And it took them a while to establish that mom was gone.
Before you even met Mona Simpson, like, you had no idea about her. I remember obsessively reading the Simpsons book that was the family album that showed the family tree of the Simpsons. That was the first time I'd ever seen Mona Mae Suggins or whatever her name
was. Oh, they actually called her Mona?
One of her fake names on that episode, of her actual episode in the book, was her name in the book. They were very inconsistent with the names. It's same with like those half canonical things that like Marge's dad died on a roller coaster.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
they say those a couple times, but that's never been capital C canon.
You got anything, Bob?
I think that's it. I mean, I just like how, as an adult, how the episode ends, they win by being so bad no one can fix them.
Yes.
And that's where the victory is. And like every episode we watch, like as like going into these, I didn't think I'd be having fun, but I just like how dark the endings are. Just like usually they win by being losers. And that's how they win at this episode.
And the double your money back thing, I'm convinced now in my mid-30s that it's an exclusive TV deal. I can't imagine anybody doubling your money
back. Well, in real life, they find a loophole to not give you your money back. Like, that's what happened.
Sign this, say you were never here. Mention this and you'll be sued into oblivion. Marvin Monroe, God, I love that guy.
Dr. Marvin Monroe.
So how about,
he was also inspired by a radio therapist of the time who they knew, something called David Hiscott, they said on the commentary, and they knew him because Gene and Reese, who worked on the Gary Shandling show, wrote him into an episode.
Well, how about we do line of the show?
All right,
who wins?
That's the joke.
Okay. So I would have easily given this to Burns for because this made me laugh so hard for some reason. The Simpsons are shocking everyone, each other in Marvin Monroe's office.
This was my
and
favorite line.
The
too.
Line start, the entire town's electricity starts dimming.
Boy, someone's really gobbling up the juice, sir.
Excellent. Excellent. Perhaps this energy conservation fad is as dead as the dodo.
So that is just choice Burns. Vintage Burns.
Is that the first excellent?
Excellent.
It could be.
Because he says it twice almost like they know it's not a thing
perhaps
he says.
This aired fourth, and I don't think Burns played excellent a prominent role excellent in
Homer's Odyssey. That was like episode
three.
No,
he's major in Homer's
Odyssey. Nope. You're correct. But no.
But I still don't know if he says excellent in it.
I'm going to give
We're
it,
doing these a little out of order.
I'm going to give it to Homer because I had a couple clips that struck me as hugely funny. I would give it to him just for his why response. I thought that was great.
Why?
This reminds me of one of the jokes I remember my dad laughing a lot at, and not me, because his sense of humor is a little more sophisticated.
You know, and I know this family needs help, professional help,
So I made us an appointment with Dr. Marvin Monroe.
The fat guy on TV?
You're sending us to a doctor who advertises on pro wrestling?
Boxing, Lisa, boxing. There's a world of difference.
Are you sure this is the right thing to do?
Honey, I've given this matter a lot of study, and of all the commercials I saw, his was the best.
And but if we needed to tip him over, over Burns here, simple, short, sweet, Homer wins because of this.
I got some wieners in my pocket.
Yes. So Homer takes line of the show.
Wieners in my pocket. That scene where they get shot at, they run 8 steps like, whew.
Yeah.
Like it's, that is such a cartoony moment. It's, yeah.
Are we done? We're all...
This is really off base for The Simpsons, mm-hmm. but it's got good stuff in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And
that scene in the psychiatrist's office is worth it for the entire... Right,
they're kind of working their way to that the whole time,
and worth revisiting for the ending for you arcade fans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that.
That is talking Simpsons, I think.
I think so. Wait, I have one boring anecdote.
Go for it, Bobby.
I saw this episode not for the first time, but again in a very weird place. The Sears boys' clothing section. I don't know if it was the boys' clothing section, but it's when the Simpsons were, as soon as they came out, there was merchandise everywhere. Yeah. And at JCPenney or Sears or whatever, there was just a kiosk full of Simpsons merchandise, shirts, toys, mm-hmm. and there was always a TV playing episodes
at all
times, just like on a loop. So my grandma would go somewhere looking at blouses, and I'd just sit there and watch The Simpsons.
I'm going to go to the Simpsons clothing section and hang out here for as long as I can.
So I remember watching this episode just... While my grandma was shopping, and I learned dark things about humanity.
Anybody who gives a shit about decor or commerce would not air dysfunctional Simpsons episodes inside of a family-friendly
wanted to
department
grab that
store,
money train.
I suppose.
Yeah, boy.
And to this day, Sears remains that important to all of us, I believe.
Well, unlike a lot of stores that were open when this episode aired, Sears is still open.
Yeah,
so
that's crazy. They lost their tower, though.
Most Sears are load-bearing Sears in any mall. They can't be removed. Or else I said that joke on Retronauts before, but I can say it again now.
Speaking of Retronauts, close it out with some plugs, Bobby.
Yes, please go to usgamer.net. I write there, and I am also employed by that place, so I want to stay employed. And also, I do Retronauts, a classic gaming podcast that's weekly. Go to Retronauts.com and listen to us. You'll like it.
And I want to thank the Patreon donators. We want to turn this into a regular show starting with the second season. Patreon donators, of course, are getting these episodes for free.
Yeah, I've been having so much fun recording these. I want to keep doing more of them. Mm-hmm. This has been great. And just re-exploring Simpsons episodes from a new perspective, it's amazing. I love it.
So that's been Talking Simpsons. We'll be back next week with a new episode. Thanks again for donating.